Commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. Excuse me. It's a Tuesday. If you want to call in to the Laundry House Gang, we're at 907-458-TALK. That's 907-458-8255. And in that, in the gang, we have Mike, Craig, Wayne, and Karen. And Karen, good seeing you here because you make it from a gang to a group. Anyway, but
now, are you trying to say she doesn't have her gang colors? Come on.
No. She lightens you guys up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, Craig, what's on your mind?
Oh.
And don't go to where Compo's Boat Street buying something from
you.
Yeah,
we're still having our spring order period for this. All the 12 seconds into the show. It's frustrating. Every time you turn around, it's more federal overreach. And I think Wayne hit it right on the option here. We met at the governor's office there. A group of us went down there and met with his commissioners and the governor for several hours. And I think Wayne hit it right. He said, it's probably time for the nuclear option. We're done playing nice. We have to be done playing nice. It isn't working for us.
Wayne, what did you mean by that? What's your...
Well, we've sort of been frog-boiled for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, the ANILCA gets passed, and there's a subsistence provision in there, and then we have to comply, and we have to try and do this. We have to co-manage, we have to dual manage, and there's been a drip, 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 or a elevation of the temperature in our frog boil to where it's just gotten so hot that if we don't jump out of there, we're going to die, and we'll be boiled. And the way things have gone lately with the Federal Subsistence Board, as I've looked back into its origin and its presumed function and read the law that is not even in the law, it's just an administrative creation. As I look at that stuff, I'm saying, man, you know, our Alaska Constitution says we don't discriminate, but the federal law, that is ANILCA, says you do discriminate, and it's pretty darn hard to manage with an outfit, to co-manage with an outfit whose basic need or basic reason for being is to discriminate when yours is to not. So I'm thinking, the craziest thing I can think up, and people did kind of go, when I said the words nuclear option, is we just need to tell the administrative state of the federal government, we got this subsistence thing. You guys don't have to worry about it. You're not supposed to. It's not in the law. You've just made this all up. And so why don't you just find something else to do? That's a pretty radical thing to say. But I'm a soft-spoken, easygoing kind of guy. And maybe some folks will think about it more than they used to.
Interesting. And Karen, what do you think about that? You know, is he a radical? Wayne?
I believe he's always been a radical. In fact, when I went to work for the department, I was warned to stay away from him because he was sort of a lightning rod. And...
good advice.
And yeah.
But he's been proven right over the years.
He is. But the thing about the nuclear option and the thing about Wayne in general, I guess, is that he is a guy who can't find the box to be in. He's an out-of-the-box guy. He doesn't think in the box. So a nuclear option, which everybody probably really wants but is afraid to say or doesn't think it's possible or whatever, but I think with this governor, as bold as he is, and as I just really like our governor a lot. And I think that he's a guy who could pull it off, the nuclear option. And Wayne's right, the part about the Federal Subsistence Board is they were never part of ANILCA at all. They sort of self-created.
Yeah.
And that's part of our burden, and the fact that they keep getting away with violating ANILCA is super frustrating. So we're kind of at the end of frog boil, I think, and if the governor will take this on somehow, I think if we don't, as he said, we'll be dead. The governor agreed.
And he doesn't have to worry about re-election.
Yeah, and you can sort of kiss off our freedoms where federal land's concerned and management of resources on federal land.
Okay, well, good. I'm going to shift now to the 40-mile caribou.
Some of them were on federal lands. So I don't know what we can say.
Kiss off.
Yeah. There is an opportunity for folks out there, and it's always good to have a positive thing that they could go do. And Dave, you always ask us, you know, what should you do? But there are a couple weeks left in the winter 40-mile caribou season. The zones up around the Steese Highway road access are closed. However, the Taylor Highway over the other side of Tok there is open. The DOT has opened the road, at least up on top of the sump for summits there. And there are caribou there. And there is a quota of maybe a little more than 80 caribou left. Obviously, that's a long way to go. I mean, it's a 300-mile trip from here to get into caribou country. But if somebody wanted to do it and had the time and had their snow machine greased up, it is available and will be until either the quota is met or we get to the end of the month. And there aren't very many hunts open right now. So if somebody wants to take a shot at putting a little meat in the freezer here toward the end of the season, that's probably the best one going.
Wayne?
I have a question. I don't know how to act on that deal. If I want to go caribou hunting...
Think outside the box, Wayne.
Well, I'm trying to think inside the box here.
That's not what you do, but go ahead.
If I want to go caribou hunting, I might remember that the reason we have caribou seasons is to cut down the herd because there wasn't enough grub to go around. So I go up the Taylor Highway. I have a permit and whatever else is required. Should I shoot a cow and hope to bring the population down, or should I shoot a bull to save the population?
A quandary.
It is. I don't know how to act as a biologist hunter.
Fairbanks, now you know how I feel when these four walk in a room with me. It's, you know, I don't know what they're going to say, but I know they're going to have epiphanies and have it described to you as the listeners.
Well, here, let me give you another caribou epiphany this morning that's going on. Today, the Board of Game meeting in Soldbotna, either late today or tomorrow, will discuss Proposal 207, which is another proposal that doesn't come from the public, by the way. It comes out of the administrative situation of the board works with a harvestable surplus in trying to keep its conservation of populations. The harvestable surplus in the Nelchina caribou herd has dropped very, very low, and it has dropped so low that it is the number of caribou that are needed for subsistence under the state definition is higher than the harvest quota. And what that does by our administrative rules and whatnot is it puts us into what's called a Tier 2 hunting situation, where Alaskans that are most have the most history of use of the available quota get to have a priority in hunting them.
Mm-hmm.
So right now there is not a Tier 2 hunt in place for the Nelchina caribou herd, but the board has to consider one because of these biological factors. Now, there are some other isolated factors in there that may change that a little bit, but they're going to take that up. Now, that has been a hugely controversial hunt for a long time, and the board has gone way west of Nebraska trying to figure out how to deal with it. And what I mean by that is they are so far out in the weeds they can't find where the road is behind them. But this may start them over and get them going in the right direction, and that's what some of the folks that are observing are hoping will happen when they get into this. But here's one of the problems. The Nelchina herd, of course, the problem is that we hunt them during hunting season starting in the fall in Unit 13 down in the Nelchina Basin, somewhat east of there as they go up toward the Chistochina and over that way. But they don't stop there. They keep right on going, and they walk right around the end of the Alaska Range through the pass there, and they go right on up into the Taylor Highway country where they actually mix with their buddies from the 40-mile caribou herd. And so here's the Nelchina in kind of bad shape. The 40-mile, we really are not quite sure what kind of shape they're in yet because the nutritional factors are not good, but we don't know what they're doing this year yet. So we'll try to find that out when the weather breaks and whatnot. But right now, I was talking with the biologist the other day and kind of jokingly said, well, where are the Nelchina caribou herd? And they said, well, they're speaking Canadian. Apparently, there are five or six Nelchina callers, bunches of caribou that have a leader or somebody that's with them that's got a collar on, that are right over close to Dawson City.
But they're wearing COVID masks.
But they're wearing COVID masks. And they're all carrying papers so they can come back into the United States when they cross the border.
They got visas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting that we have one herd that we've been wanging on, actually reducing the population by hunting, and another one that has a population that's so restricted that we're now going to have to go to Tier 2 to hunt them. And the two of them are having kumbaya sessions on the same range during the winter.
Fairbanks, with that, we're going to take a break so we can analyze and digest. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
You know how I look forward to our little chats. I admit I do most of the talking, but as a septic tank buried in my family's yard, I don't get out much. My last company was a moose who dropped by for some freeze-dried geraniums. Her table manners were atrocious. I have but one job. My life expectancy is excellent. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing pumps me out once a year. I continue to serve my family much better.
Hey Fairbanks, Les Nichols with Fairbanks Nissan. Someone asked me recently if I would match an alternative service facility's $399 brake job. I told him, no. A brake job at Fairbanks Nissan is only $299 all the time, and we work on all makes and models, not just Nissans. And with the money they save, they could also get an oil change, a multi-point inspection, have their car washed and vacuumed out because we have a full-service detail department. And our technicians don't just have ASC certifications. They also get regular factory training and continuing education to make sure they're at the top of their game. We can pick you up and drop you off, or we can pick your car up and drop it off. If you need a car to drive during your service, we have a rental fleet. Need tires? If you buy three, we'll give you the fourth for a dollar. You can set an appointment online, get text message updates, and pictures of the process. So we cost less than the alternative, offer more, with ASC and factory-trained technicians. Oh, and we're fast. Make an appointment online today at lessaysyes.com. That's lessaysyes.com.
$299 brake job is our everyday price. Fairbanks Nissan is a full-service dealer for the people. All makes and models are welcome. Teachers, active duty military, and first responders can receive a 10% discount on labor. See dealer for details.
Weather brought to you by GCR. Maintaining your correct tire pressure improves safety, fuel economy, and tire life. Drop by the Tire Guys for free tire inflation. GCR Tires and Service, taming the Alaskan road. Van Horn at Cushman.
KFAR weather.
Highs around 38 today under mainly cloudy skies. Winds out of the east around 5 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies, tonight 11. High of 36, tomorrow partly cloudy. Cooler Thursday and Friday with highs from the low 20s to the upper 20s. Snow possible both days. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Karen, Wayne, Craig, and Mike in the studio with me. We're sort of in between seasons here, so with that, we take the opportunity to discuss federal issues, federal problems, state problems, outreach, overreach, reaching the different places. Mike, what's on your mind?
Well, that's kind of where I was going to go. Wayne brought up the overreach situation with ANILCA, and we need to really take a strong like. We played go along to get along for way too many years there. And hopefully that'll happen. And then I will talk more specifically about the situation where we have a caribou hunt open, but let's tie the two together a little bit. that caribou herd is one of the examples. It does not live on state land or federal land. It lives on both. And most people that have observed or talked about caribou herds realize they kind of go where they want to go. And a lot of times they go to similar regions, but not necessarily, you know, that river junction or Craig's camp on the unnamed interior river or anything like that.
Oh, but the good pasture.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
No 40, name. 40, no, 40 miles up.
Yeah. No name, Craig, 75.
But what I'm getting at here is that these things are interrelated because at the same time where we fight over wildlife issues and wildlife uses, and Alaska tries to use a non-discriminatory approach and the feds use a discriminatory approach, and then what Wayne didn't say is then they come back and they put the kibosh on cultural type of things and historical type of uses. So there's actually a project now to try to get the feds to overturn some of that because they have just gone in that direction now and again to the detriment of some of the same folks they're supposed to be trying to help with their ANILCA responsibility. So what I'm getting at here is that we have a problem right now that the state is fighting on navigability. We're still fighting over, we shouldn't be, but we're still fighting over navigable waters and state ownership and uses. We're fighting over trails and old winter trails and that kind of thing with them, and we're fighting over these things like resources. And they are, because of their virtue, the Fed agencies and the Department of the Interior, plus the Department of Agriculture, Forest Service, they're in a situation where they have unlimited resources. They literally tell people like John Sturgeon, don't fight with us because we have all the money we need and we can just wait you out.
Okay. And even when you win twice, they're not going to comply.
Right. They are just trying to rewrite the rules around it.
Yeah, and see, those are the examples of what we're talking about now where we have just put up with this stuff for too long.
Let me give you one example of how bad it is, like with the recent decision by the Biden administration to overturn Trump's decision that overturned Obama's decision. Basically.
The yo-yo back and forth.
Yeah. Predator control. On traditional practices, whether it be bear baiting or bear denning, and some of this stuff. I talked to a fellow, and we're making a video, an educational video, in cooperation with SCI and John Sturgeon and some others to get the word out. But one thing that this rural buddy of mine said that he's from the Hoosley area, and he said, "Look, there's unintended consequences. There, you know, the agencies." Come out and say, we don't care where you're from, who you are, there's no more shooting a caribou that's swimming across the river, there's no more bear denning, there's no more bear baiting, you know, not on federal lands, not anywhere in federal lands. And he says, here's an example. He goes, there's obviously, it's no newsflash, there's no fish in the rivers anymore to speak of. And so these predators aren't eating fish. What are they doing? They're going to go eat moose and caribou and take food off the table in these rural areas because these predators are
hungry.
Now, they're hungry and they're going to go get the food. So when they make a decision that we don't care who you are, where you are, you're not going to do this because it doesn't meet our values, it's like he said, they are killing our culture, these agencies. And so when we were down in Juneau, basically, we were saying we're going to secede from these federal agencies, or how Wayne puts it.
The administrative state.
The administrative state. It's time to secede from the administrative state. Just tell them, we're done. We're not going to pay attention to what you say because you're out of bounds.
Right?
There you go.
People don't realize, but the Federal Subsistence Board is made up of the Alaska heads of agency of the BIA, Fish and Wildlife Service, Forest Service, BLM, and National Park Service.
Well, as I opined in today's paper, something or another, ANILCA is not a fish and wildlife subsistence law. It's a land control law. That's what it's for. Mm-hmm. And I'm really disappointed that the federal government and the minion people that tell them what to do, that faction of our society that doesn't want anything to happen on any land, you know, has basically co-opted the federal government to where it has become a land control deal. Then they've perverted subsistence protection into land control. And that's not a new idea. That was thought up clear back in the early 80s.
Yeah.
So maybe we should give Al a call and give him a good what for what he's doing down there in Soldotna. facing the extreme snowstorm?
Al will be on the right side of the fence. He's already voted. The board has had several 6-1 votes in the proceedings so far. You'll never guess who the one.
Al.
God bless him.
But this situation of them not knowing, not understanding, and trying to, like Wayne and Karen are saying, trying to tie Alaska into a bigger federal, what they consider their federal rules, what they let other states get away with on some federal lands. Now, you got to remember that a lot of federal land, a lot of over half our states, there isn't any federal land. It's all, you know, just little pieces here and there. It's not like the West where half of the states or more, or 60% in our case, are federal lands. And then there's some private lands and then some state lands. So it's one of those deals where they want to make us fit the mold, and we don't. We don't by our constitutional privileges.
Yes.
We don't by the statehood compact, which the federal government agreed to and said, yes, Alaska, we want you to do your things this way. We want you to use your resources to make your living. And then they prohibit us from doing that and make us into a colony.
What it comes to, I think, is congressional laziness. You know, they have a big issue like federal lands and interests, whatever, that they create in Alaska. Mm-hmm. I don't recall hearing the Nebraska National Interest Conservation Act or Nevada.
Or the New York.
Yeah.
Is that happen. NELCA?
Or the Southwest America.
Yeah.
Or the Central Region.
Well, let's pick on New Mexico. The Department of the Interior head is from there.
But Congress is lazy. You know, they pass a law that's overreaching and overarching, and then they throw it at a federal agency and say, implement it.
Yeah.
With no oversight.
Make the rules.
And that's where we are with our troubles with the federal government. No oversight. They thought they solved the problem with the NILCA subsistence Title VIII, threw it up in the air. The people Mike just mentioned, the Crown Jewels crowd, ran under it and caught it, and they've been going for the end zone unimpeded ever since.
So you look in the paper this morning, listen to the news, the Willow Project again is shut down. Because of the lawsuits filed.
The lawsuits that were filed one day after it was signed into.
To wipe out the 10-day window so they can't start the gravel road.
So the development contractors were doing a terrible thing. They were building an ice road out of snow. And that is now shut down. They were doing that so they could get to a reasonable gravel source to build the pads out of. They weren't hauling any gravel yet. They were just hauling, making a snow road. So now that's shut down until at least April 6th, I think it is, or 4th.
Which is out of season now. Yeah.
Well, then we're going to be out of season with the...
Geez, what a coincidence.
Yeah,
and you know, I'm reading up on Deb Holland, who always gets my vote for the worst federal employee of the year, the head of the DOI. You know, she was just about in tears when she was talking to the folks up in Nuiqsut, although most of the state is very supportive of this project. You know, they took 40% of it off the table. They wiped out, we were just talking on the break, they wiped out 25,000 acres for future development.
Square miles.
I'm sorry, 25,000 square miles, 16 million acres for future development. And yet, who's the number two producer of oil in the country? New Mexico, her home state. And, of course, Biden said during his campaign, we're putting an end to oil. I guess that's as long as it's not in New Mexico, Mexico issue. So it's, and then the day after that, after she lost the Willow Project, she went after...
Her vengeance came out.
She went after,
King Cove
and reversed the trade they did for the road. So now that's off the table. So she basically, you know, if you look at rural folks, she's making enemies of them. She, you know, a lot of folks in Nuiqsut are furious with her. And now the folks at King Cove, she says, like, that's the revenge. I'm going to go do something else and upset another group of folks out in the middle of nowhere.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break here. I'm going to leave you with some bumper music. It's the Human League. God knows what it is, but we're going to find out. Then we're going to have some Fox News, some state news, some weather, some commercials, and we'll see you in a bit.
coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
The Manhattan District Attorney's Office today responding to calls from the House Judiciary Committee for DA Alvin Bragg to appear before Congress over the criminal investigation of former President Trump.
A spokesperson for the DA's office telling Fox News Digital, quote, "We will not be intimidated by attempts to undermine the justice process, nor will we let baseless accusations deter us from fairly applying the law."
Fox's Brian Yenis in New York City. Talks in Moscow between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese President Xi Jinping have ended.
Russian President Vladimir Putin talking up his dear friend's plan for peace in Ukraine. "It could provide the basis of a settlement," says Putin, "when the West is ready for it." Xi continuing to insist his country is impartial in the conflict.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The House Resources Committee heard testimony on Monday about the air quality in the Fairbanks North Star Borough non-attainment area as a group of representatives offered support for a joint resolution. House Joint Resolution 11, sponsored by Reps Will Stapp, Ashley Carrick, Maxine Dibert, Frank Tomaszewski, Mike Prax, Mike Kronk, and 9 other state representatives, is urging the Environmental Protection Agency to develop a proper wood stove certification program. The resolution also asked the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation to develop an economically and legally defensible state implementation plan. The wood stove certification program has been a bone of contention, with state officials noting the EPA's current list contained models that emitted as much as PM2.5 pollution as older models. The Environmental Protection Agency seems intent on turning attention toward so-called greener sources of heat, including electric heat pumps that will work as solutions in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, reads a sponsor from STAP, the resolution's chief sponsor.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Tune in to Shooter's Corner, your source for news and conversation regarding guns, local events, and your Second Amendment rights, with your host, Laura Berkowitz. Sponsored in part by Auto Trim Design, an Alaskan company offering products that help you get the most out of your car or truck. Moose lights, auto starts, bug shields, spray-on bed liners, signs, graphics, and more. Visit Auto Trim Design and listen in every Thursday morning at 11 to Shooter's Corner, right here on KFAR Radio.
Trying to find something good for lunch? Just follow all those working trucks. Every day they line up at A&W on Airport Way for satisfying burgers, fries, shakes, and sweet treats. For lunch on the run or a job well done, turn to A&W for tasty deals and one-of-a-kind specials to help your dollar work as hard as you do. All-American food and good old-fashioned value. And lunch that works for working people. A&W Restaurant on Airport Way. Burgers, dogs, and world-famous cheese curds. Come in today and get a hot deal on a brand new special. A&W.
The Fairbanks Clinic has been here for you since 1932, the year Amelia Earhart completed the first female nonstop solo flight across the Atlantic, the year BBC aired their first television broadcast. That was over 90 years ago, and they're still here, still taking care of you and your family. That's the Fairbanks Clinic in their beautiful building at the corner of Cushman and Gaffney. Call and schedule your appointment today with their family care practice. That's the Fairbanks Clinic, here for you since 1932.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Karen, Wayne, Craig, and Mike, stalwarts of the Laundry House Gang. Now, what is the Laundry House, where does the Laundry House Gang meet?
We meet every Wednesday at noon at TVSA. It's a bring your own lunch.
Yep. And how long you been doing this?
78, late 70s.
Well, we've been meeting somewhere since then.
Yeah.
Well, the organization's been around over 40 years.
Used to be the El Sombrero.
Yeah.
And then it got moved to Denny's.
When that burnt down, we moved.
And then Denny's moved.
So then, you moved to the top floor of a gun shooting range.
Yeah, sort of.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Heimer, you're in the newspaper today. Let's discuss the Sturgeon initiative.
Well, John Sturgeon is a folk hero, and we all appreciate what he did. Appreciate that, you know, he was just trying to do his thing up on the Yukon River, and the feds did their thing, and we got into this big thing over whether you could use a hovercraft on what the feds claimed were federal public lands, which were really water. Figure that one out. And he goes to the Supreme Court after he loses all the way along, and he wins once, and they remand, I think means they send back to the dumber court that they overturned, fix this, and they didn't fix it, so he went back again, he won again. And, you know, John has figured out in the course of this terrible odyssey that things are in a mess, and he would like for us to fix the mess. And I agree with him, we should fix the mess, and I think what I have in the paper today, I make up stuff almost every day, so I'm not sure what it was yesterday, but it's a little bit of a history.
Don't go Biden on me. Don't go Biden on
me. No, I think mayonnaise is excellent for shaving.
You'd have to bend there.
I do it every morning. But the thing is that the feds, because of the lack of oversight by the people that really want, the point of Anilka subsistence is to let people eat food and maintain their culture. But it's been changed by administrative actions to where it's a land control law. The people that sit on the subsistence board are federal land managers. That's their priority. Using subsistence as a lever, they are controlling land. And that means excluding as many people as possible. I wish they wouldn't do that anymore.
True.
Related to that is the upcoming navigability bill, Senate Bill 92. And I'm going to testify. There's on the 29th at 3:30, there's going to be testimony on that. Last year, it went unanimously, and then it got hung up in fisheries, and it died in fisheries. It's not going to happen this year. I think it's going to pass pretty easily. Initially, there's going to be additional chances for the public to testify in hearings after the 29th. I don't know the dates yet, but Senate Bill 92 is an act relating to state ownership of submerged land underlying navigable water within the boundaries and adjacent to federal areas, and then providing it for an effective date. So basically, we're going to be telling the feds these are state lands, the submerged lands, and they're not under your control.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be really interesting to watch any legislator that votes against that.
Well, you know, a couple things have happened. A few legislators are not voting when it comes time for a resolution.
Eastman.
Well, he voted against.
Oh, that's right.
But
he said on, only because he didn't have time to read it.
On a resolution to endorse the Willow Project, which legislators, for whatever reason, did not vote that day. Yesterday was a vote to put in the money, you know, a resolution for putting in the money in regards to the litigation behind it. Which legislators in the House did not vote? It went 34-4.
Josephson, maybe?
And again, two. So you want to take a look at the two, both times, that did not vote.
Yeah.
That might tell you something. In one of them, I know Maxine Dilbert, on the first round, she did not vote on the Willow Project to endorse it. She did not vote at all.
What about who's the one that replaced Wohl?
Carrick. She voted for it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Carrick. Yeah. Ashley. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but those who vote and those who vote for and those who vote against, and then there's people who don't want to be on the record.
Yeah.
And you're there. You're voted in for a reason. This is what your beliefs are. This is what you do. And
grow
if you're
a
not,
spine.
And if you're not voting,
grow a spine.
Yeah. Exactly. Who are you and what are you?
Yeah.
Now, you know, whatever you are, just let us know. Vote how you feel. Vote your conscience. Vote what your constituents believe in. City of Fairbanks, we believe in this. We believe in oil resource development. You know, you have people in rural Alaska who don't want the Ambler Road. I can understand that. That they believe that is a interruption in their life. Things like that. Look at the Ambler Road. Look at Willow. Who votes? Who doesn't? Who votes for? Who votes against?
Unfortunately, over the last few years, so many people are voting against. Red Dog was the last 32 years ago, last time we built a road.
Yeah.
32 years ago.
And it's an industrial road that makes Ada a 7% return on its investment every year. Every year.
but not in my backyard.
Yeah, and it was an industrial road construction. Not a the public doesn't get to go down that road. So anyway,
the locals do.
Yeah. That's correct. The locals do.
Yeah.
For hunting and fishing opportunities locally.
Yeah. Well, that's one of our continuing complaints about ADA projects. We have the same situation at Pogo, where we have 50 miles of road. Doesn't go anywhere near their property, anywhere near the prospect, anywhere near the mine, but the gate is
closed
on the
but
whole road.
The idea that the locals can go down the road may be on the block, because the Secretary of Interior has just announced plans to move the Office of Subsistence Management from the Fish and Wildlife Service to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which is an interesting business, because when Anilka was going down, Ted Stevens amended out race preference to rural preference.
Yeah.
And if we're going to have a race preference agency, you know, managing the Office of Subsistence Management, what does that do to rural residents that don't have to be native? It doesn't look too good.
No, that's called discrimination.
Yeah.
My goodness. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You listen to KFAR Radio. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. When we come back, we're going to talk about Wayne's squirrel hunting prowess and Karen's injury. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Sure, driving on our roads this winter may seem like navigating the Oregon Trail, and they don't seem to be getting any better. But as your car creaks and clanks over every ice chunk in the road, know that you can do something about it. Just swing and see the crew at Pearson Auto. Let them check your suspension, shocks, tires, and whatever else might have rattled off over the past few months. That's Pearson Auto off the Ridge or on Airport across from Pikes. Pearson Auto might not be able to do anything about the roads, but they can do wonders with your car. Pearson Auto, your dealership alternative.
Did you know Italians don't eat bread as an appetizer? It's tradition for the bread to be used at the end of the meal to mop up the sauce on the plate. Good thing you don't live in Italy, because once our waitstaff brings over your homemade garlic bread, it is nearly impossible not to grab some immediately after smelling it. You can try to be Italian and save the bread until after your meal, or you can be yourself and eat it before, during, and after.
Giraldo's Italian Restaurant and Pizzeria. Say yes to garlic, say yes to Giraldo's.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR Weather.
Mainly cloudy today with a high of 38. East winds around 5 miles per hour. Partly cloudy tonight. Lows dip down to about 11. A blend of clouds and sun again tomorrow. Highs level off around 36. Turning cooler Thursday and Friday with highs from the low 20s to the upper 20s. Snow possible both days. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. And we have to hear woeful stories now. And one of them is the game management of Wainheimer's squirrel population. It's getting out of control. And a wildlife officer has let it happen.
Sometimes management goes awry because of inaction, and that seems to be what's happened out at my estate. It wasn't a particularly cold winter, and the squirrels have not been as inactive as I would have wished. In fact, well before the ravens were courting, I thought I saw squirrels courting, and was unable to, with my other many duties, to deal with the problem, and they've got me on the run.
What was my solution for you?
I should find a couple boxes of 410 ammo and turn a 12-year-old loose.
Anyone here disagree with that thought?
Pretty effective.
Yeah.
I don't have one of those, but...
12-year-old?
Yeah.
Or a...
Find one. Or two.
It's rugged out there.
But here's something. You know, it's beautiful out. It's March. Isn't it this time of year for ptarmigan?
Yeah.
When they start grouping up, going into the hills?
I'd ask Tinker.
You know, you guys are the smartest people in the world when it comes to hunting and game management, and you're at a loss?
Well, I don't have any ptarmigan in my freezer.
Non-game.
I did have
the okay, white. Let's just, you shifted it to Mr. Tinker.
A ptarmigan pair up a little later than this, usually end of March, 1st of April. But they do concentrate in the wintertime, and so they get from their little one per every 200 yards or whatever. If you go back to the Steese Highway studies in the 1960s, you'll find some data about there's one on this hump and then 112.3 yards over here. There's another pair, and et cetera. But they flock up. They get into fairly large flocks, especially in the high country where there are willows that, excuse me, that they get into. Now, what they're doing right now, I don't know. I have not been out and haven't really talked to anybody, but I can't imagine that if someone were out traveling in the tree line area, that they would find some ptarmigan. You got to really watch this time of year on the rules and regulations for where you are, because the Board of Game has, over the last few years, shifted trying to cut down on specific concentrations of hunters. Ones like in the Denali Highway country, the season changes to where the bag limit goes way down this time of year when they're accessible, and you can take a decent snow machine and get close to them. I don't know if Craig could provide any of those.
Yeah, all kinds.
You know, they'd probably find them somewhere around the community. Ptarmigan would be ptarmigan hunting would be a good spring activity to do with your
on a skidoo.
Yeah, well, you know,
my grandpa, actually, when we first started selling the Husky, remember the old Husky? Yeah. My grandpa was a big bird hunter, and he took him. My dad got the first one in Fairbanks, took it out, I think, to Cleary Summit, or might have been up by Cleary Summit,
and got it stuck.
Yeah, no, they were able to go through the snow, pop a bird, and go pick the bird up without putting your snowshoes on and walking through the snow. And my grandpa told my dad, this is going to change everything. That's what he told him. When he realized you can go on top of the snow and stop and go, he said, this is going to change everything. And it did.
Yeah. But I think, to your point, Dave, it's a great time to get out.
You know, Craig Campo, he told me, you know, I've said this before, he told me that this is how the Elan changed everything. He could escape the Fort Wainwright MPs on an Elan in the deep snow. Yep. They couldn't catch
they
him.
They were on some Johnny Arctic cat, Idukovich, some fast Arctic cat. They could catch us and would dive into the armpit powder, deep sugar, me and Johnny Idukovich. And we'd just go out just far enough and look and just look at them. They knew not to come after us. We tried
it
that.
Changed
we
everything.
We just sat
for,
there, crack a soda, everything, and looked at them or whatever.
That's what squirrels do to me.
Well, if you got the 12-year-old and the 410, that would change everything, sir.
I will give it some thought. My trapping prowess is not what it should be either.
It's amazing how things change, Dave. I was talking to a fellow in Anchorage this morning, and I mentioned that the 40-mile caribou hunt was still on. He could go, and he kind of sighed, and he said, you know, he said, I'm sitting here in front of my nice, warm fireplace and going 400 miles to go out in the woods to chase a caribou just doesn't sound like it compares today.
Sure. Now, you're looking at spring bear. So when should a person start getting ready for spring black bear?
Later.
You know, we're only on once a month.
Yeah.
So you talk about it now so you can prep them for
there you go. Well, brown bears will start to come out now, and then there'll be some out in the high country, especially Alaska Range area. But black bears will be a little later, probably April, and then they'll start. When both of them come out, usually when the brown bears leave the den, they're at tree line or a little bit below, and they generally head fairly quickly for vegetative areas where there are moose and caribou and things for them to eat. Because when they come out of the, think about Denali country, your den's at 3,500 feet, it's above tree line, the bear comes out, stretches, says, this is a nice place, but there's nothing to eat here. So he takes off down country and goes looking for something to eat. Black bears have a similar type of thing, a little bit bigger vegetative diet, and they will come out, you know, after things get a little greener and whatnot with the leaves. But
middle of April, I know down at a Cantwell area is good. I got my big grizz on the 14th of April. It was my dad's birthday. I remember that. But that's usually, and it's also the time when in the late afternoon, it gets tough to go through. You got to have a super wide track or something to stay on top. So you get up early.
Yamaha.
Go out looking.
What was that Y word? Yamaha?
I'm standing in for Bill Larry.
I've got a Yamaha. I do have a, it's a piano, but I have a Yamaha.
Dave, you've been with us at lunch. It's really fun to have Craig and then Bill in there. Bill, of course, from Alaska Fun Center over there and sells Yamahas and other things. And the two of them get going about, well, you know, this machine and that machine. And the rest of us, it's just sit
back
and
laugh. It'll never end.
Yeah. Well,
competition is a
wonderful
thing.
That's why you're called a gang.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. And my thought also is this is a time of year where ice fishing is going to be starting up also.
Absolutely terrific. And you're hearing people talk about it a little bit even on the radio now. It's a great time to go just because of the fact that you don't have to bundle yourself up like it's 50 below. You got to be watch for the wind if it's blowing a little bit because you're sitting still usually when you're fishing. And but yes, it's a great time to go, and it's fun to be out there in the sun and what a real good time to take the little guys. Craig will probably take his grandkids.
I did one of my radio shows with Dominic Monzingo, who's a really very very good ice fisherman. And
avid is the word.
Avid. He's got the one of the new augers that are the battery powered augers that he just swears by. It weighs like nothing. It's got the big I don't know how many volt, 40 volt. You know, it's the big Makita type battery. He says you can drill 36 holes with one battery charge. He says it's just unbelievable. They're spendy. They're $700 or $800. He
but
said,
they're light and they're powerful.
So light and powerful. He just carries an extra battery.
Yeah.
And I, you know, they got them at Sportsman's and Century, I think, and other places. But they,
in case he has to dig another 36 holes.
Yeah. I don't know what he's burying, but
I got my Weatherby. I got my that I've not shot yet, and I got my scope on a Leupold 4.5 to 14 power. And I'm going to be going into the me and Mike Desmond, my hunting and fishing partner. We're going to be he's chosen the Besna area for us to go sheep hunting.
Nice.
There might not be a sheep, but you know Mike's 69, I'm 63, and we could still go do this. We're fly in, climb mountains. We did it 2 years ago. We probably did 40 miles in 4 days, and climb mountains and. You know, it doesn't matter.
You
know,
somehow you look more like the mayor than
yeah. Basically, this is the most expensive gun I ever bought because I got to go get some with my gun. Yeah. It's your fault, Greg Compo. It's your fault.
You and I have been cheap hunting, Dave. I remember that was
a couple of recommendations
80s.
When you do that, Dave, and that is one: shoot that rifle before you go.
Oh yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And then the other thing is, take that thing and put it on 4.5 and tape it down, and take your binoculars with you.
Yeah.
Some of in my 25 years of guiding. Some of the biggest problems we ever ran into is a guy was trying to use his scope as a.
Well, I asked if I bought it over at the Gavora's place there.
Century.
And
best place.
You know, I wanted to get a 2 to 10 power, and Leupold. I've always had a Leupold scope, and they didn't have it. And the smallest they could neck it down to was 4.5.
Right.
Oh my God!
I think
things have changed since the last time I bought a scope.
Well, it's better to not to worry about whether it's a 2 or a 3, but to keep it on the low end and then know what you're seeing in your scope.
Yeah.
So that when you look at it, for example, a 1 foot diameter target when you're target practice, how much of that scope is that taking up at 100 yards or 200 yards, whatever you're in.
Yeah.
So that when you do look for an animal. You have a relationship between what you've seen and what you're going to shoot.
Yeah,
it's
your rangefinder.
I've had hunters try to shoot at a moose at 60 yards away with a 9-power scope on 9-power, and all you might as well have a 12x12 wall of moose fur up there because that's all they can see.
Yeah,
my thought. What I'll do is, when I start sighting it in, I'll have it at a higher power. But once it's sighted in, I drop it down to 4.5, and that's where my 100, 200, 300 yards. You know, I can put with my other guns, I can put in about a 3-inch circle at 300 yards, 3 rounds. You know, but I do that at a low setting. So that's what I'll do with this.
If I had a gun that would do that with me, I'd take it.
So anyway, what do we get? What if you were going to recommend some outdoor event, hunting, fishing, or sightseeing? Karen, what's your outdoor event to do for the listeners to abide by?
Well, I'm kind of a birder, but actually, I just found out about something at the boat show in Anchorage that just a quickie thing, is that the Coast Guard Auxiliary, almost anything that is a job in the Coast Guard, volunteers can do as part of the auxiliary, including a guy from Palmer's on the icebreaker Polar Star in McMurdo Sound in Antarctica right now, because he was able to go on the ship and do whatever his expertise is. And they got this huge range. Anything you could imagine that the Coast Guard does, volunteers can do as well, except maybe some highly secret stuff. But there's a, who knew?
Yeah. Hi, Mr. Heimer, what's your recommendation? Squirrel hunting at your house?
Yeah, it's open.
Open season or open for anyone?
Oh, it's just open. I've noticed that with the warmer weather, that little overflow is starting to show up on the Chena and the Tanana River, so good time to go snow machining weather-wise, but watch where you're going.
Mr. Compo.
Yeah, snow machining on the river. There's a lot of overflow in the interior rivers this year, more than normal. Some areas are just bank to bank, and so you got to be careful about that. Your throttle's your friend in those instances when you get into it. Don't stop if you find yourself an overflow. Find a good spot. I'm hauling fuel up the river here for hunting season pretty soon, and going to do some ice fishing along the way.
Miss Mike.
Well, I might have to go and haul fuel.
But if you didn't have to haul fuel.
There was a couple things that people could get into that are not out to, you know, catch a fish or shoot something. It comes to mind, almost every one of us has in our picture collection some nice pictures of the Alaska scenery, the rivers and the hills, taken this time of year when you got great light, whatnot, the kind of thing you put on your Christmas card, even though it's not just a tree or something. And I have a neighbor that did that the other day, was showing me some pictures that she had taken, and they were just, I mean, above tree line local hills here, but they were just beautiful because the light was so terrific and she could do that. And it dawned on me when you said that is something that people could do. They don't need a lot of extra equipment. If you got your good phone with you, that's all you really need. And it gets you out in the country and enjoy the outdoors a little bit.
That's a good idea. I'll bring my camera, take a picture of a burbot I'm going to catch this week.
What would I do? I would go get on a skidoo.
And that's the show, folks. Thanks a lot for joining.
I would go down to the mouth of the Chena River and get on the Tanana and start setting set lines out for burbot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I would go after the river lobster, as they call
burbot it. Burbot McNuggets, we call them.
Yep, even though I don't eat fish.
Oh, you'd eat those.
No, I wouldn't, but I would cook them incredibly well and give them away to my friends.
Mm. You have plenty.
I don't have any friends in this room.
Al would trade you for kimchi.
Yeah. So, anyway, good show, everyone. We got about a little bit over a minute left, but good show. Some events coming up for the state. Yes, Mr. Heimer.
I saw a red pole the other day. That's a bird.
I did not know that.
didn't see any last year. Thought they'd all been made extinct by the bird flu or something, but they're back.
Okay. Yeah, they usually come back first. And there is the Goose Watch program going on. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, you can't go shoot cranes and geese out there.
I'm a goose dropper.
Unless it's with a camera. It is a bird sanctuary. You can't hunt out there moose with a bow.
Mm-hmm. If you had a Weatherby that would shoot.
What if a goose flew in the way while you were shooting?
That's in Delta. That's in Delta.
All right.
Fairbanks, that is our show. Mr. Well, anyway, gentlemen and Karen, it's been a good show. The Launderhouse Group, since we have a nice person here. And I will see you tomorrow. I'm going to have Nick Nugent in the studio with me, and we're going to continue our discussion. And this time, it's going to be on the history of Ween Air Alaska tomorrow. Hopefully, you listen to it and tune in. I'll see you tomorrow.
Karen, I have it.